Chapter 3, Becoming a Conductor, from the book I Am a Conductor by Charles Munch. Now that you know how I became a conductor, take this advice. Don't do it my way. Chance, happy chance, has had a big part in my career. But it is better to start out with a detailed battle plan rather than trust too much to luck. Except, of course, that you must be ready to take advantage of it when you can. And bear in mind, besides, that these days, when everything is organized, systematized, and standardized, conducting careers are not made by chance. In France, in the United States, and everywhere, there is a lot of machinery to set in motion if you want to become the conductor of a symphony orchestra. When you have passed through this conductor-making machine, you find that there is a bigger market for your talents than there was for those of my generation. In France, the national radio is a big help. Everywhere there are radio and television, opera, ballet, and theatrical companies, and many more. The interest of a good manager can be effective and is sometimes even indispensable. But there are no employment agencies in our field yet. In spite of all the new opportunities, there are no more great conductors in the world than there used to be. I find this a cheering phenomenon. Does it not prove that talent and innate gifts must still precede glory and renown? I should really have liked to be a stage director and designer, to see living actors in their roles, to be able to direct them, control their movements and the intensity of their emotions. A musician can understand perfectly the profound changes in characterization that take place on a level where words can no longer express emotions. There, where subconscious and dream begin, the domain of the musician begins. Having conductor printed on your card will not make you one. You must earn the right to call yourself a conductor. And you can do so only by proving yourself an artist. One of the reasons that conducting is difficult is that it presupposes an enormous body of theoretical and technical knowledge. Since you conduct all the instruments, you must know them all. You conduct music with which you have no previous acquaintance, and there is even a time when Beethoven's Fifth is a first performance for you, so you must be able to identify yourself with the composer and rediscover for yourself his intentions and his state of mind. You must make a thorough study of the means of communication between conductor and orchestra. And especially because music is getting more complicated every day, you must not omit the smallest particle of musical knowledge from your education. I think that thorough acquaintance with an orchestra instrument is of the greatest importance, and I am convinced that mastery of one of the strings is the most profitable. The strings are the foundation of the orchestra, and it is important to know exactly what you can expect them to do. In times gone by, most conductors had been violinists. By tradition, the leader of the first violins took the conductor's place when necessary. Playing an instrument lets you in on the inside. Nikisch was a violinist and Toscanini a cellist. It is the best way of discovering the problems that face the musician. They are at worst a mere shadow of the conductors, but you will be on the right track. You can tell at a glance and sometimes from a single chord whether the conductor knows all the subtleties of the strings. Has he arranged the bowings so that every note will have the special quality he desires? He will not really know what to expect if he has not tried them himself. At the same time, it is important to avoid seeming to play an imaginary violin while conducting. An allusive gesture may sometimes be necessary, but systematic mimicry complicates the musician's task. The signs they need are at once precise and evocative. It is good to know the wind instruments, too, both wood and brass. To familiarize yourself with their timbres and to know their coefficients of virtuosity. The problem of attack varies a great deal from one to another, from horn to oboe, for example. You don't give trombone and flute the same kind of send-off. The musicians have breaths to take and motions to make that are measured in tiny fractions of a second, precise fractions when you need an attack in perfect unison. You must know either instinctively or from experience the precise moment at which to bring each one into play. Thorough study of a good treatise on instrumentation is indispensable. Look at Gavin, or Vidor, or Berlioz Strauss at Forsyth, or Piston. It is impossible to know how to play every instrument, and the best way to get acquainted with them is still to sit with a score in your lap at every orchestral performance you attend, following the phrases of piccolo, or trombone, or oboe. In Paris, it is especially interesting to attend the annual competitions at the conservatory. When you have heard 30 clarinetists play a caprice composed especially to test and show every quality of instrument and player, you will not soon forget what the clarinet sounds like and what it can do. And why not attend a conservatory class as an auditor from time to time? There are always discoveries still to be made. I proved it to myself during my 1953 vacation when I attended Passarone's percussion classes and Sabaric's in trumpet at the Paris Conservatory. And then there is the music written on 24 lines or more that you must be able to read simultaneously. If only for safety's sake, you should have complete command of harmony and counterpoint. Educate your ear, for you work with your ears even more than with your arms. Oh, many times have I said at rehearsal, listen to what the others are doing, gentlemen. Listen to what is going on around you. It will make the rehearsal seem shorter and more interesting, and everything will sound better. The study of solfège, which is essential to the practice of our art, is sometimes treated lightly in the conservatories, but it is more important today than ever. 12-tone music and other kinds of modern harmony are full of traps for ill-trained ears. The knowledge of figured bass, harmony, and counterpoint, the ability to play a Bach chorale in four different clefs, all this helps the conductor to analyze a score, see how its gears mesh, and what makes it tick, helps him to understand the structure and its delicate elements of balance. It is easy to tell what a chord is in a piece of piano music. With a full orchestra score, your eyes and ears must be thoroughly trained. Copying orchestra scores is an excellent exercise. There is nothing more tedious or more effective. You inscribe the notes on paper and the sounds in your mind at the same time. As the ink dries, a kind of auditory crystallization takes place. And with a little practice, you hear what you write more distinctly than when just reading notes. You soon find that you are no longer content with simply running your eyes over a score. You can no longer let it keep any secret from you. I also recommend that you try orchestrating. It is much more satisfying than just copying. Take any song or sonata, or orchestrate the piano reduction of a symphony and compare your work with the composer's original. You will be surprised at the differences. A good memory is one of the conductor's trumps. Studying, copying, orchestrating sharpen the visual memory of the score page. Every conductor should be naturally endowed with la mémoire sonore as well, the oral memory, the ability to remember and recognize sounds, to retain in the mind a sonorous image of things heard as he might the visual image of things seen. You must be able to hear more than others do, to remember what you have heard, to recognize it when you hear it again, and to recall at will any oral impression. For 2 years, I had charge of the conducting class at the Paris Conservatory, and just as when I had taught violin at Strasbourg, I learned a great deal. Our first step in studying a symphonic movement was to analyze its construction, break it down into phrases to see how it was put together. Take the opening of the Eroica, for example. The first two measures are two chords. Then there is a 12-measure period that can be broken down into 3 4-measure phrases. You know a great deal about a piece of music when you know where every phrase starts and stops. Then, after a harmonic analysis of the structure, one student played the score at the piano while another stood up and conducted. I used to ask that he conduct simply and, above all, clearly. I did not permit conducting without a baton, which has unhappily become fashionable. It is a bad habit, in my opinion, that creates difficulties for the musicians. I am sure that anyone who has ever played in a professional orchestra will agree with me. I always consider the baton an extension of the body, magnifying every movement of arm and hand in space. The essential thing is perfect clarity of gesture, which is becoming more difficult and more important every day because of the metrical complexity often found in modern music. The right arm beats the meter. The left indicates the nuances. The first is reasons, the second the hearts, and the right hand must always know what the left is doing. The conductor's aim is perfect coordination of gesture with complete independence of the arms, so that one side will not contradict the other. I did not require my pupils to learn their scores by heart. As Rinaldo Hahn said, you go to concerts to admire the music, not the conductor's feats of memory. I have seen some of the greatest memory acrobats make catastrophically sad mistakes. It is especially dangerous to conduct accompaniments by heart. I know that it always makes soloists nervous. Finally, it is not wise to send young conductors out to do battle without preparation by an acute observer whose principal purpose has been to correct their every motion suppress their every superfluous gesture, refine their styles. The teacher shows his students all the dangers, but their own experience will teach them best how to avoid them. And on the day when they can at last stand up in front of real, live orchestras, the young conductors will be on their way. Does the public suspect the physical strain of conducting a 2-hour concert? The conductor, by definition, inspired and poetical, must have unusual nervous and muscular equipment. He must be as exact and expressive near the end of his labors as at the beginning. This is one of the athletic aspects of conducting that has convinced me of the importance of gymnastics in our work. Gymnastics help attain a higher physical discipline, ease of movement, and independence of the arms. It teaches how to conserve energy and to overcome fatigue. Then the day comes when the student leaves the conservatory. He has to earn his living, but there is small likelihood that an orchestra will come to seek his services. And happily so, for his apprenticeship is only beginning. The new conducting diploma is like a new driving license. It is better not to use it on the superhighways without some more practice. And for this, the young conductor must unhesitatingly seek out a post with an orchestra, if only a modest post as a player. From his place there, let him watch the masters of his profession at work. Let him watch his neighbors, his comrades, and learn to know an orchestra's reactions. An orchestra is a battalion, and you must penetrate the depths of its mind before presuming to command it. Finally, the hour will strike when he too can take control. Let him not believe that his studies are over now. A conductor's life is a perpetual renewal of learning. In this connection, I have never forgotten an experience I had once with Toscanini. I was already conducting when he came to Paris once for a series of concerts, thinking that nothing could be more instructive. I asked the orchestra manager's permission to play with the first violins. An extra chair was put on the stage for me behind the usual last stand, but my extra violin part did not have the same bowings as the others. Toscanini noticed immediately that my bow went down when the others went up and told me so. I felt that his eyes never left me throughout the rest of the session. Imagine my surprise on meeting him again in New York many years later at his perfect recollection of the incident. Throughout our careers, we must know how to take advantage of every opportunity offered us. We never finish learning.